Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Sadivav. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Joe Alaham in honor of the rabbi. Tiskele Mitzvot. May he have continued success. Today's daf is being studied Le'elun Nishmat Acham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam. And it is also being studied the Nishmat Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. Before we begin today's daf, which actually we will begin on Tzadihe Amud Bet, and we will start five lines from the bottom, starting from the words Amar Rav Aseh. But before we do that, let's just review the five laws that we said regarding a Kli Heres. Kli Heres is an earthenware vessel. We explained that if it incurs different types of holes in the Kli Heres, it'll affect it in the laws of Tum'ah. Depending on the size of the hole, it'll make halachic differences on the laws of Tum'ah. So the first law was Nikav kemotzi mashke, meaning if let's say the earthenware vessel has a hole in it, that causes let's say the liquid from the inside to pour out of it. Okay? So the deen is tahor minitame gistira. Let's review what a gistira is. A gistira is like when you have an earthenware vessel that breaks, let's say. So they would use the chards of the vessel for another purpose, if it was big enough. If it held, let's say, at least a revi'it, which would be about 3 ounces of water. So they would use it to catch, let's say, the leakage if the roof was dripping or something like that. They would place the chard over there to catch it. So the Gemara is telling us, Sedin by a Kli Heres, that if you have a gistera, which still has viability to become tameh because it has a function, however, if the gistera gets even the smallest hole in it, where it causes water to drip out of it, then already it's tahor, and it loses its susceptibility to tumah. Why? Because by a regular Kli Heres, let's say it's a vessel, if it gets a little hole in it, you're not going to junk the vessel. You'll still use the vessel, but it's leaking, so you'll put a gistera underneath it. You'll put a coaster, like I said in yesterday's shiur, a coaster underneath it, just to catch the little drippage. But you're not going to put a gistera under a gistera. That's already too much. It's a broken chard already. To go put a broken chard under it to catch the drippage of the first gistera, it's already too much. So therefore, a hole the size of enough to be motzi mayim will render a gistera tahor. However, the keli itself, which is if it happened to a regular vessel of a keli, it's considered a viable vessel to the extent that if you need to use it, for example, to put mehatat in there, which is the waters that were used in the for the paraduma for sprinkling on people that were contaminated by a med, it's considered a viable keli, even though it has that little hole, it's still considered a keli for that. That is deen number one. The next hole is a bigger hole. Gemara calls that a hole of kekones mashke. Kones mashke means the hole is big enough that when you press it down, the empty vessel, if you press it down in water, if water will be able to enter the keli from the outside, that's already a bigger hole. So what's the deen over there? That keli is not considered a complete keli to use anymore for mehatat. Torah says keli, this is not a keli anymore. So therefore mehatat cannot be placed in that vessel. However, it's still a keli, the Gemara says, lehakshir bo zira'im. Let's review the law of hakshirat zira'im. We learned earlier that if a fruit that is detached from the ground receives, becomes wet from one of the seven liquids, yad shahad dam, it is now mukhshar le tumah, it is prepared to receive tumah, meaning if something tameh now touches it, it can receive the tumah. But this din of hakshara can only be on something that is detached. So therefore the Gemara is telling you, let's say you have a flower pot. We have an atzitz. And there's a nekev in the flower pot, but the nekev is only as big as to machnis mashke. So such a small hole is not considered attached to the ground. Which is even according to the rabbi's opinion that we learned in the Mishnah, that an atzitz that has an akuna kivanit, a hole in it, it's considered attached. Why? Because we said it smells the earth, and therefore it's considered attached. Such a small hole is not going to give it that deen of mechubar, and therefore it's considered detached, and therefore any water that falls on those fruit, it'll have a deen of hakshara, because it's considered mukshar on a detached fruit, because it's not considered attached to the ground, because the hole is too small. That is the third deen. I'm sorry, that's the second deen. Deen number three, you have a larger hole. That is nikav kishoresh katan. The hole is big enough for a small root to come out of it. Now the deen on that is tahor melehakshir zira'im. Regarding haksharat zira'im, we're going to consider now this hole big enough to be considered mechubar, right? According to the shita of the rabbis again, that say that a hole in a atzitz, in a flower pot, that is the size of what? Now we're learning the size. The size is at least big enough for a small root to come out of it. That'll give it a deen of attachment. Okay? And therefore it's considered attached. And for the law of Haksharat Zira'im, it will be considered attached. And therefore, if water falls on it, it will not be considered Mukshar. And this opinion is even according to Rabbi Shimon. Whereas Rabbi Shimon will say that this hole does not render it attached for other dinim. However, as we learn from a Gezerat HaKatuv, in the Torah, that any sort of attachment of a fruit to the ground, even this quasi-attachment according to Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't really hold of mechubar in the normal cases, he will say that vachshara is considered attached, and therefore there is no deen. However, adayin keliu lekabel bozetim, but such a vessel on its own still has the ability to receive tum'ah, because you can still use the vessel to store olives. That is the standard shi'ur that you use for normal vessels. It has to be viable to hold olives. So since this hole is only the size to come out of a small little root, so the vessel itself, if you have a regular kili hayadis with that hole in it, the size of a small root, it's still considered susceptible to tumah, because you can still store olives in it. Okay? The fourth deen, let's say you have a kili hayadis and now there's a hole in it the size of an olive. So there the Gemara says, it now loses its status of susceptibility, because now it's not viable for olives. It still has the ability, however, to receive tumah if you designate it, I have to say a very important point, if you designate it for rimonim, if you designate it for pomegranates. Until you designate it, however, it's tahor. Because bottom line, stam kili heres, the shi'ur to make it non-susceptible for tum'ah is the size of an olive. Right? And since most people would store, let's say, those size items in there, now you can't store it anymore, tahor. Unless the guy comes along and says, you know what? I am now going to use this to store pomegranates. Now, since he can store pomegranates in this can, because the hole is only the size of an olive, so therefore, it'll receive tum'ah. Okay? Now, the fifth and final deen, we said, once it gets a hole the size of a rimbon, now it's tahor from everything. Jeez, there is no next level. So that would make it not susceptible for any tum'ah at all. Now, one point should be mentioned, the shita of Rashi. Rashi holds that, let's say, the keli heres has the hole the size of a rimon, it is still viable to use as a gistera. Because now it's a chard, basically. You have a keli heres, you touch a hole in it, so therefore, if you designate it for a gistera, then it will still be able to be susceptible to tumah. So there is one condition in the case of rimon. So again, the five levels started off, the smallest hole, which was just Motzi, A bigger hole was machnis. The other hole was the size of a shoresh katan, then a zayit, and then a rimon. Then the Gemara said that there is actually a sixth din. If you have a keli that has a hole in it the size of a rimon, okay, but it has a vessel, earthenware vessel, keli hayres, but it has over it a semit patil. Semit patil is a seal. It's sealed on top. And now it's in the house of a mit, ohel mit. The law of ohel mit is that tum'ah can only enter through the opening, through the top. It does not enter through the sides. Okay? So since the top of it is tzamid patil, it is sealed, so this keli now, the items that are inside of it, are not going to receive tum'ah. Okay? When will it receive tum'ah? Only if the majority of the keli is opened, which means on the side. Even though you have a seal on top, if there's a hole that is the majority of the vessel, then the tum'ah can even penetrate through the gaping hole and mitameh. However, if it's the size of a rimon, it will not receive tum'ah if it has the tzamid patil over it. If the rov, if the size of a rimon or less on the side, and it's tzamid patil on top, it'll be tahor.
And the other five, two out of three are probably tahor?
It depends. Each case, it depends on each case. Each case has a different deal.
Even a drop hole?
But has to be totally sealed on top. Sealed. Now, based on that, you have a keli, you have samit patil on top. All the other can be on the side. On the side of them. Doesn't matter. Like we learned in the Mishnah.
All things that you wanted to hold up to here.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You can hold olives. It doesn't matter if the hole's anywhere. The olive's not going to fall out. It's less than the size of an olive. If you have a flower pot and have a hole that a root comes out of it, so that's considered enough hole that the earth will smell the earth.
But there's the size of a rimon up here. Nothing's going to fall out, this whole thing.
Again, I don't know the detailed question that you're asking exactly, but we will continue. Now we start from where we are up to. Amar Rav Aseh. Rav Aseh said, Shamati, I heard, says, I heard that the shi'ur of a kiriheres is motzi rimon, which means once already it has a hole the size of a rimon, then already it is tahor. So the Gemara says, Amar le Rava, Sheme lo shamata ela bemukav tzamid patil. So Rava told him, wait. Regarding the whole of a keli hayres, the shiur is an olive. That already brings it to tahara. When you said the shiur of a rimon, you must have meant regarding the tzamid patil law. Meaning, if you have, let's say, a keli hayres, and you have a tzamid patil on it, and it has the size of a rimon, Rava is telling you that the tum'ah will go in to the rimon size hole and mitameh. So now where do we have a contradiction? Because a second ago we said Rava holds that the shiud is rov. It only enters rov when it's rov hole. Now you're telling me no. That even if it's less than rov, if it's just the size of a rimon. Right. So the Gemara says, Veha Rava...
Metameh the keli?
Metameh what's inside the keli. So the Gemara says, keli, it's only metameh inside.
What's inside?
What's inside? Veha Rava... Who de amar mukav samid patil ad shifhat rubo? What do you mean, Rabat? You just taught us that the sixth level is what? That when you have a keli cheres and it's samid patil, only when it's rov opened on the side, then what's inside becomes tamin. Now you're telling me, even the size of a rimon? Make up your mind. Is it rov or is it the size of a rimon? What's considered the shoe that tumah will go in from the sides? So the Gemara says, "La kashya, no question, exactly." Habe Rabbi Rabbe, the habe zutre. One's talking about a big vessel, and one's talking about a small vessel. That she understands this to mean on a big vessel. Now nobody defines to us what a big vessel is, but for our purposes, we call it a big vessel, Rab Rebbe. Then the shi'ur for tum'ah to enter on the sides is rov. It has to be the size rov of the keli is has a hole. However, on a small vessel, it's not enough to have rov. It has to be minimum rov, but it has to be at least a rimon. Then the tum'ah will set in. So therefore, he's coming along to say that drava beitudirim. Rashi, top line. Bira brebe berubo. Zutre kemotzi rimon batele michli. Which means, even let's say you have a rov of the keli, but it's not the size of a rimon, then the tum'ah will not go in on a small keli. It's got to be at least the size of a rimon on a small keli, and on a large keli, rov. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rav Aseh. Rav Aseh said, Shonim, we learned, keli heres, the size of a keli heres, the whole shi'uro bekones mashke. The shi'ur is, once liquid can come in from the outside, it's not a keli anymore. For what? For mehatat. As we learned, that once the size is already shi'ur machnis mashke, you cannot use this keli for putting the water of hatat in there. Velo amru motzi mashke, and the law of motzi mashke, which was the first shi'ur, water going out, ela le'inyan gistera bilvad. That was only said to gabe gistera. That what? If the gistra has that small hole in it, it now becomes tahor and not susceptible for tum'ah. My tama, what's the logic? Amar mor zutra bered Rav Nachman nefishe en omrim have gistra le gistra. Because a person doesn't say, bring me a gistra to put under the gistra to catch the drips of it. Like we explained, you don't put a coaster under a coaster. In that case, where the gistra has a hole in it, you throw it away. That's why that small hole can even render the gistra not susceptible to tum'ah. Amar ula. Ula tot. Peligiba tre amora'e bema'araba. There's a machloket between two Amoraim in the west, in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Abin, Rabbi Yosef Bar Zavda. Hadamar kemotzi rimon, the hadamar keshoresh katan. Which means, now we're going back. What is considered the shi'ur of a keli that's going to keli hayres, that's going to render it tahor? So now we have a mahloket. One rabbi says the size hole of a rimon, while the other rabbi says the size of shoresh katan. Rashi says, what is this regarding? Rashi says, what is this regarding? Peligi ba dehechsher zira'im. Regarding the law of hechsher zira'im. Meaning, for something to be mukshar, we said what? It has to be considered detached to be mukshar. Right? So we learned that if it's the size of a hole that a small root can come out of, that's already considered attached. And therefore, for Hechsher Zira'im, it'll be Tahor if the water falls on it. So that's one opinion. But there's another opinion that says, no, the hole actually has to be much bigger. It has to be the size of a rimon to be considered attached to the ground for the law of Hechsher Zira'im. So we learned earlier one opinion. Now we're seeing is actually a machloket. Is the shi'ur of attachment to the ground for Hechsher Zira'im, is it the size of where a root can come out, which is smaller, or is it a larger shi'ur, the size of a rimon? That's the machloket of Amoraim and Ezesayim. V'simanach, how are you going to remember this machloket? You'll remember with a phrase of Hazal, Echad amarbeh ve'echad amamid. Whether one does a lot or whether one does a little. That's a Gemara that says, Echad amarbeh ve'echad amamid u'mabad shichaveh nibol ha-shamayim. When it comes to korbanot, it doesn't matter how much a person brings. One guy brings a lot, one guy brings a little. The main thing is, he's l'shem shamayim. But here we're going to use it in regarding the measurements, which means as follows. Let's read it in Rashi. Braitahi, v'hi lecha lesiman, she'echad min ha'amoraim, one of these rabbis, riba l'sha'ir begadol,
one rabbi took the larger measurement, Shibishiloshtan, out of all three measurements, which means the last three measurements mentioned in the Braita were Zayit. Zayit was one. Rimon was the other, and Shorish Katan. Let's go in order. Shorish Katan, Zayit, Rimon. Out of the last three Shiurim, which is the smallest? The smallest would be Shorish Katan. Which is the largest? Rimon. So that's how you remember. Hada Marbe, Behada Memait. Now, why didn't we take into account the first two Shiurim, which are even less than that? So that she says, Shibiloshtan, Shibiloshtan. Velo Bebenoni, the first two are such small holes that I wouldn't even think that they're considered attached to the ground. So the only holes that are coming to the discussion are the last three. And in the last three, we have extreme opinions. One rabbi takes the smallest shoot of the last three. That's the shortest katan. And one takes the biggest shiur of the last three. That's the rimon. Hence, how do you remember it? One took the largest of the last three shiurim. One took the smallest of the last shiurim. Comes again and says further. Amarav penina barkana. Meshemed rabbi Eliezer. Kelicheres. Kelicheres shiuro kemotzi zetim. Which means, that which we said earlier, that a kiriheretz to become tahor, the standard hole has to be a zayit. Umor keshisha bered rava mesayem ba meshemed rabbi Eliezer veharen kichli galalim uchli abanim uchli adama she'en mekabelim tum'a lo medevre Torah velo medevre sofrim. And then he went further and said, not only when the zayit hole comes into this keli hayres as a tahor, but it has a status of kli gilalim, that's dungware, kli abanim is stoneware, kli adama is earthenware. The difference between kli adama is kli adama they don't put in the furnace, where kli hayres they put in the furnace. She'en mekablim, these types of different materials, made vessels out of them, they do not receive tum'ah, lo medevre Torah, velo medevre sofrim. Which is, once the keli gets a hole the size of a zayit, not only it's tahor, but it's tahor like these items that have no tum'ah, bichlal. What's the chidush? So that she says, areu kechli gelalim, meshenikev kemotzi zayit, vaafilu yehadam nerimonim. This opinion is coming along to say, and even if you designate this keli now to use as a keli to hold it in monim, it's not going to help. It has a din of these items over there that are tahor on those situations. So therefore, the Gemara is now arguing again. You see a variant opinion of what we learned earlier. We learned earlier that once you have the zayit hole, if you designate it for the monim, it'll still be viable to receive tumah. Now it's coming up to say, no, these items have a din of those type of kelim, and even if you designate it for a rimon, it's going to still remain tahor. Aye, but what about the fact that it says, we learned earlier that one of the shiurim was a shiur of a rimon, so a shiur of a rimon was not said according to this opinion by keli heres, it was said by keli etz, wooden kelim. The law of rimon only has, earlier we learned it by Keli Hayres, but that statement of Rimon, do not learn it by Keli Hayres according to this opinion, learn it by Keli Hayres. That why? That so long as it has a hole that's less than a Rimon, it can still be used, it'll be susceptible to Tum'ah. But by Keli Hayres, once it has the size of a Rimon, Zayit hole, it's Tahor, there's no way it can become Tameh. Last part, Olinyad Samid Patil Ad Shifhat Rubo. When it comes to the Samid Patil rule, like we learned earlier, that if it's covered in oil amit, ad shifhat rubo, only until the majority is opened. But so long as the, let's say, less than 50% is open on the side, that Samid Patil will protect it. Once it's 50% or more, let's say, then already the tumah will go in through these sides. Hadran alach hamatzniya. That concludes perek hamatzniya. Now, Be'ezat Hashem, we begin the 11th perek of Masechet Shabbat.
Perek HaZorek. Again, this Perek primarily discusses, again, the laws of carrying, which we discussed in many of the earlier Perakim, specifically the first Perek. But here we're going to discuss two different aspects of carrying. We're going to discuss carrying through Zorek, meaning throwing something from one issue to another or in the same domain. And we're going to discuss Ha'abara. That's transporting or transferring something from one domain to another domain over a domain in between. Okay, we're going to discuss that case as well. And just the fact that you're transferring something without actually walking it from one domain to another domain. That is going to be the first Mishnah. Hazorek mirshut hayachid lirshut harabim. Mirshut harabim lirshut hayachid hayav. First din is if a person throws, whether it's a private domain to a public domain or the opposite, so you have an akira in one domain and a hanaha in yet another domain, you're going to be hayav. Next din, mirshut hayachid, mirshut hayachid, mirshut harabim be'emsa. If let's say you threw an item from one domain, mirshut hayachid, it was lifted in a mirshut hayachid, and you threw it and it landed in a mirshut hayachid, but there was a mirshut harabim in the middle, so you threw a ball. Right, the ball started in a mirshut hayachid, it flew over a mirshut harabim, back into the Shuta Yachid. So here we have a machloket. Rabbi Akiva mechayev. Rabbi Akiva says chayav, and we'll see in the Gemara why. Vachamim potri. Okay. Now the Gemara comes along and says ketzad. Now, this is the rabbis going to explain to us the dinim of zorek and the din of moshit. Moshit means to transfer. Let's say you have two balconies. Okay? Zu keneged zu birshut harabim. They're on opposite sides of the rishut harabim. You could already start using your pirush hai. In picture number 457, you see over here at rishut harabim, you see two balconies that are over the Reshut Harabim. Right, on different sides of the street. Hamoshit vehazorek mezu lezu patur. Whether you are moshit, meaning you pass something over from one balcony to the other, or whether you throw something from one balcony to the other, the Mishnah's din is patur. However, hayushten bidiyuta achat. If both balconies, let's say, were on the same side, meaning if you look at picture 458, right, it's on the same side of the street, you have two buildings that are next to each other, both have, like say, a balcony coming out from one of the floors, and there's a Reshut Harabim in between, and you are now passing from one balcony to the other, so the Gemara says, Hamoshit Hayav. If you pass from one to the other on the same side, hayab, vazorek patur. But if you throw, patur. Question is why? Shekach hayta avodah talviim. Because that's the way it was done in the Mishkan by the Leviim, the Merari family that was in charge of transporting the Mishkan. Now, how did they transport the planks of the Mishkan? An agalot, on wagons. So the way they set up the wagons to transport, it is going to prove to us the deen. How? Shtei agalot zu achar zu birshut harabim. You had two agalot, zu achar zu, back to back from it. These two pairs of agalot. You had one agala, an agala behind it, okay? And next to it you had an agala, and an agala behind it. You want to see the picture? You can see 459. You see the way the agalot were. Right? You had two rows of two agalot, back to back to each other. Okay? Now, in between was the midbar, which is considered a reshut harabim. Now, they needed to take the planks of the Mishkan and place them on these agalot. These agalot are considered reshut hayachids. Why? Because they were lifted off the ground. Okay, they are at least 10 tefachim off the ground, and they have the measurement of 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim, and therefore they have a status of Rishut HaYachid. Now, you have the first wagon is Rishut HaYachid, there's a little space behind it, Rishut HaRabim, the Midbar, and then the wagon attached to it is behind it is the Rishut HaYachid again. Now let's see how they transported the planks. You have the Nevi'im standing by the Mishkan, right? You have a Nevi standing, he takes a plank and he gives it to one of the Nevi'im that are on the first wagon. So he takes it, right? So now the plank is on a Rishut HaYachid, right? And that Nevi slides it back so it goes across the second wagon. So they're actually transporting from a Rishut HaYachid over a Rishut HaRabim, right? Into another Rishut HaYachid. And it's all on the same side, because that was the configuration of the wagon. They didn't have to go across. Geez, they didn't go from one set of wagons to the other set across. There was no purpose for them to do that. They just went in a straight line backwards. So what do you learn from there? If you have two balconies on the same side of the street, like picture 458, so therefore if you transport from one to the other, it's just like the configuration of the agalot, and therefore you're going to be hayab. But if you throw, you're patur. Why if you throw you're going to be patur? Because they didn't throw the planks of the Mishkan. Why didn't they throw the planks of the Mishkan? For the obvious reason, they're very heavy, and if you're going to throw them, they're going to break, you're going to damage them. And furthermore, they're Kodesh. You're not going to take something that's Kodesh and throw it and disrespect it. Therefore, Zorek, we did not find in the Mishkan, by the same Rishuyot. By Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaYachid with Rishut HaRabim in the middle. Not when it's across, or not when it's on the same side. So Zorek is always going to be Patur. Moshit is passing or transferring like that, we found in the Mishkan, but only when? On the same side. Because that's the way the Agalot were, but we did not find transferring across the street. So therefore the two balconies that are across the street from each other, Moshit is going to be Patur. Across the street, Patur, same side, Hayav. Now, we can read this in Rashi together. But let's just finish the words of the Mishnah, gentlemen. Bazorek patur shekach hayta avodat halevim. Shtei agalot zu ahar zu, b'shut harabim, the agalot were back to back. Moshitin hakerashim izu nezu. They would pass the kerashim from one to the other. That's the shut hayta to the shut hayta to the shut harabim in the middle. Avalo zorkin. But they would not throw them. Now let's read Rashi together. Dibur matil patur. In the Mishnah, dibur matil patur. שלא מצינו זריקה והושטה במלאכת המשכן מרשות היחיד לרשות היחיד ורחב רשות הרבים מפסיק ביניהם. We did not find throwing or passing in the משכן on a רשות היחיד to רשות היחיד which has a רשות in the middle, meaning across the street. That we did not find. On the same side that we did find. שלא הייתה עבודת הרבים כך להושיט קרשים מהעגלה לעגלה שבצידה, because they didn't pass the קרשים from an עגלה to the one that was across it, אלא לעגלה שלפניה. They only, or שלאחריה, they actually passed it to the one that was behind it. Now he tells you the configuration. שארבע עגלות היו לבני מרארי. Right? They used four wagons, the מרארי family. שהיו נוסעים קרשי המשכן. They were the ones in charge of carrying the קרשים. והן הולכים שתיים כאחד זו בסד זו. Geez, they would go in pairs, two on one side and two right next to them. כדברים בגמרא, וכשהיו פורקים את המשכן, when they take apart the משכן לטעון על העגלות, to carry them on the wagons, היו מעמידים העגלות כדרך הליכתן. They would configure the wagons in the direction that they were going to travel. זו שתיים, זו אצל זו, right? Two next to each other, samuk lemishkan ushtayim zu etzel zu. Right, so you had, like I said, you can see the picture, two rows of two agalot back to back. Lefnem derech alikatan leorech reshut harabim, to the length of the reshut harabim. Shayu rotzim la'alek, that's the way they're going to travel. Ahar amud adan, after the cloud. Haolech lefnem upurkei mishkan, and those that took apart the mishkan, moshitin hakerashim leotan she'al shtei agalot hasimuchot lemishkan. They would give the planks to those that were on the agalot sitting next to the Mishkan, v'moshitim notan shlifneim, and they would pass it to the ones that were in front of them, which is the way you're looking at it, in front of them. That's the really the way we have the picture. It's behind them, in front of them. It means the agalah that is next to them. But again, they did not go cross. They did not go across. Which means they were both the agalot were next to the Mishkan. There was no purpose to have to transfer from one across each other. So it's straight from the Mishkan to the Agalah, but to the Agalah they pushed it back. As you see in the picture 460, where you see the Levi'im there placing it on Agalah number 1, and then there's the Levi'im standing on the Mishkan, and they are transporting it back into the Yeshut. Now you do see a Hiddush over here that should be pointed out. Number 1, you see Hiddush that you can go from Reshut Yachid to Reshut Yachid and be Hayav, because it's going over a Reshut Rabim, even though your Akira was in a Reshut Yachid and your Hanaha was in a Reshut Yachid. But since that was done in the Mishkan, that's going to be Hayab. And you also see a novel Hiddush here that obviously this took more than two people to do. They couldn't carry these planks alone. But still, even though it's done by two people, someone over here is going to be Hayab. And the Rishonim discuss, was everybody Hayav? Was one Hayav? She's clearly, there's a Hayuv over here. How many people are going to be Hayav? That's already the Rishonim discuss. So that's already a novelty also by the case of Otsah. We may begin the Gemara. Gemara says, Mechti, let us analyze. Zirika tolda dehotsahi. We're forced to say that throwing, when we told, we said in the Mishkan, we said in the Mishnah, if you throw from Reshut Yachid to Reshut Rabim, Hayav. Well, obviously, it's not one of the Av Melachot. It has to be a Tolada. And which Av Melacha would Zirika be a Tolada of? Well, the most logical one is to say, Hotza'ah. Just like transferring or carrying from one domain to another domain, so throwing from one domain to another would be the most similar to Hotza'ah. Let's read the top Rashi. Mechdi, Zirika Tolda Hotza'ah, Al Korchech Toldai. Well, first of all, we know it's a Tolda. Why? Delo Nimnit Be'avot Melachot. Because it's not one of the 39 Melachot. V'Tolda Hotza'ah Hi, She'en Lecha Letita Toldat Av Acher. And you really can't put it to another Av. Because it's the most similar to Hotza'ah. So the Gemara says, hold it. Hotza'ah gufa hecha ketiva. Before you talk about Zirikah, where do we even find the pasuk that talks about the law of Hotza'ah? Which is, how do you know that Hotza'ah is asur? I might ask a question. What do you mean, how do I know? It's one of the 39 menachot. To build the Mishkan, they needed to carry. What is the Gemara's question? Where do we find it written? What, do we find the Pasuk on Borer? Do we find the Pasuk on Tohen? The 39 Melachot are explicitly written in the Torah. We just know whatever Melacha was needed to build the Mishkan, so that's Hayav. What's the basis of the Gemara's question? Hotza'ah gufa hecha ketiva. What, and if you can't find the Pasuk, you're going to tell me Hotza'ah is not Hayav, it's not a Melacha? So the Tosafot comes along and says that ilav dichtiv lo ava mechayev ala. Yes, if we couldn't find the pasuk for this, you wouldn't be hayav on hotza'ah. It's different than all the other melachot. Why? Lefi shemelacha giru'ahi. As Tosfot says, like he said on that bed, that hotza'ah is in its own category. It's called melacha giru'ah, which literally means it's an inferior melacha. What makes hotza'ah inferior? You wouldn't think you should be Hayav on Hotza'ah. Why? Because you really didn't do anything. What effect did you do? All the other melachot, you affected change. You created something. You did something. You cooked something. You grinded something. You painted something. You sheared something. You tanned the leather. It's all constructive action. Here, it's the same item. You just took it from point A, you put it to point B. So in people's minds, Hotza'ah is, what's Hotza'ah? I didn't do anything. So it's really called a melacha giru'ah in that sense that it's inferior to the other melachot. Therefore, had we not found a beferush, an explicit pasuk, hotza'ah would not be counted in the melachot. That's a very important cloud to remember. Hotza'ah is different than all the other melachot. It has an explicit pasuk to teach us that it was done in the Mishkan. What is this explicit pasuk? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yohanan, the Amar Kirakos, the pasuk says, Vaitzav Moshe, Vayaviru kol b'machane. It says, Moshe Rabbeinu let out a call, his voice, in the machane, in the camp. And what did he say? The more I quote the pasuk, Ish ve'isha, al yasu od melacha l'trumat ha'kodesh, v'yikale ha'am mehavi. Which is the people were donating things to the Mishkan, to the construction of the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu had enough. He collected whatever he needed. All the supplies were there. All the money was there. So Moshe Rabbeinu made an announcement. Rabotai, v'yikale ha'am mehavi. The lashon is al yasod melacha. Do not bring any more melacha. Do not do any more melacha. Meaning, do not bring any more materials. Do not bring any more money. Now let's analyze. Where was Moshe? So the Gemara says, Moshe hechanava. Where was Moshe? What domain? Hechanava yati. Where was he sitting? Bemachane leviyah. He was sitting in the encampment called Machane Levi. It was a Levi. Umachane leviyah and the Levi encampment, that area, reshut rabim havai. That had a din of reshut rabim. How do we know that Machane Levi had a din of reshut harabim? So Rashi says, Shayu akol mitziyin etzul Moshe Rabbeinu. Because everybody always had to come to Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, Rashi's telling us a very important rule over here. What made Machane Leviyah reshut harabim? The fact that all the people were by him. Now this is Rashi l'shitato. Because we learned earlier that the Rashi's shita is what makes it a reshut harabim. You have to have 600,000 people that are passing through it. So that's what Rashi went out of his way to say over here, that Machane Levi has not to do with the distance of how wide it is or how big it is. It has to do with the population. Well, how many people would be in Machane Levi? Everybody. After all, Moshe Rabbeinu was sought after. Everybody had to come to Moshe. So that makes it a reshut harabim. Ve'kamar li'uli Yisrael, and he told the Jewish nation from reshut harabim, what did he say? Lo tafiku, do not come out, v'titu mirshut ha'yachid didchu, do not bring things out from your private domain, meaning from your tents, lirshut harabim, to the public domain. So you see clearly in the Torah regarding the construction of the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu told them, don't carry, don't take from the reshut ha'yachid and bring the goods to the reshut harabim. So the Gemara asks, Umimai de Shabbat kae? How do you know that this was said on Shabbat? Dilma behol kae? So maybe it was done, maybe this was said during the week. So the Gemara says, Umishum deshlim ale melacha? Because maybe they just finished the work. Let's say they finished the work on a Tuesday. So it should have been said, okay, Rabotai, don't bring any more stuff. We're done. How do you know he was telling them this on Shabbat to learn that it's a sur on Shabbat? So Gemara says, that's the end of the question, which means the pasuk does say that the work was enough. So you see the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu told him to stop bringing, because there was enough work. So therefore, maybe this was on a weekday. How do you know it was on Shabbat? So Gemara says, Gemara ha'avara ha'avara miyom kippurim. We have a gezerat ketuv. It says the word ha'avara by Kippur. And it says the word havara by this pasuk, vayaviru kol b'machane. Ketiv acha vayaviru kol b'machane. Uchtiv adam, it says by Kippur, v'ha'avarta shofar teruah, that you have to actually blow the shofar on Kippur. Ma la'alam b'yom asur, afkam b'yom asur. So the Gemara says, just like we see the word havara, that's written by Kippur, and we know that's a day of forbidden work, and it says Vayahaviru called by the Mishkan, so it must be from the fact that he used that word Vayahaviru, it's coming to tell us it's like Kippur, therefore it's Yom Asur. So when we prove in Abotai that we have an explicit pasuk that carrying from one domain to another is Asur, and the pasuk was written on the Shabbat per se, so therefore you know that Hotza'ah is Asur on Shabbat. Only question that Rishonim ask on this piece is brought down by the Tosafot, the opinion of Rabbeinu Hananel. He says this last piece over here, that saying, how do you know it's on Shabbat, is unnecessary. How do we know melachot? Melachot are any melacha that was done in the construction of the Mishkan. I don't care if the melacha was done per se on Shabbat or not. The point is, once you find it in the Mishkan, so it becomes a melacha. Especially this pasuk clearly says that the pasuk clearly writes when it comes to hotza'ah, al yasu od melacha l'trumat ha-mishkan. So clearly hotza'ah is called a melacha. Let's say it happened on a Tuesday, big deal. Bottom line, you see that hotza'ah that was involved in the construction of the Mishkan, and it's called the melacha, so therefore he takes out this girsah here, and he doesn't have this last part. How do you know it was on Shabbat? Because even if it wasn't on Shabbat, you still have a solid proof. The Ritba points out, you're right, but keep the girsah, it's just giving you extra bonus. That not only did he say it, but it happened to be actually on Shabbat as well, so it's really even more explicit, which means it's clear, it's a melacha, it was on Shabbat, that's why I told him to stop. Just to make the proof more nice. In any event, the Gemara says, Ashkechan Hotza'ah. Fine. You found Hotza'ah, meaning you found going from a Reshut Yachid to a Reshut Tarim going out. Hachnasa Minalan. How do you know Haknasa? How do you know the other way? How do you know going from the Reshut HaRabim to the Reshut HaYarid? Now, the same Gemara's answer is Sevarai. Because you know what? It's a simple logic. Why? Mechti. Mereshut, Nereshutu. Right? Bottom line, you're going from one domain to another domain. Mali Apuke, Umali Oyule. What's the difference if you're going out? What's the difference if you're going in? Now again, the Gemara only asks this because Chotza'ah is a melacha geruah. And therefore, since I only found going from a private domain to a public domain where Moshe was, you know, I can argue and say, hey, how do you know the other way? What do you mean? That's what it said. I can argue and say, hey, maybe it said what it said. Since Chotza'ah is a melacha geruah, the Gemara has to go out of its way and say, no. Even though we know Chotza'ah, the Gemara says, Sevara, it's logical to say that the other way also is going to be Asur. Actually, we know that they were Machnis. How do you know they were Machnis? We just learned it. Nagala. They went from the Reshut HaRabim and they put the boards on the Agala. The Agala was a Reshut HaYahid. No, that's clear. They went from the Reshut HaRabim to a Reshut HaYahid, the first Agala.
The Mishkan is what?
The Mishkan is the Reshut HaRabim. It's in the public domain. And they took the items. The Kirashim are in the public domain. They went from the Reshut HaRabim to the Agala. So the Reshut HaYahid to the Reshut HaYahid. But still, the Gemara says, You need a pasuk or a sevara. So the sevara is based on what? Mali ayule, mali apuke, mali ayule. Comes the Gemara and says. Miu, however, chotza'a av hachnasa tolda. However, chotza'a is the av. It's going to be the av melacha. And Achnasah is going to be considered the Tolada. Now comes the Mr. Rashi on the Bura Matir Sevarai. Rashi, Dibura Matir Sevara said, Liyot Achnasah Tolda Totsa'ah, She Me'enna Kishat Toladot She Me'en Melachot. Which is even the Gemara's attempt when it said that Achnasah is Asur, it only was understanding it as a Tolada, as a subdivision of Hotsa'ah. So the Gemara says like this, ומחדי, אהה מחייה ואהה מחייה. Either way, you have a toladot. A toladah is also deoraita, just as well as an av is a deoraita. So the Gemara says, amai kari la hai av, ve'amai kari la hai toladah. So then why do you, it's semantics, why you call this an av, and this a toladah? What's the difference? Bottom line, both are hayav and a toladah. You can kill a person for both. They're both Hayav Sikila. They're both Hayav Korban Khattat. So what do you get? This is an Av. This is a, what makes an Av an Av? And what makes a Tolada? Tolada. So the Gemara says, hey, what do you mean? First of all, don't tell me there's no difference. There is a big difference. Nafkamina, di Avid Shte Avot Bahade Adade. If let's say in one lapse, in one I'alim, right? Where you, let's say you forgot it, you forgot the Melachot. You knew it was Shema, but you forgot the Melachot. And you did two separate Avot. Let's say you were Horesh and Zoraya. How much korbanot do you bring?
You bring two. One for each av. Ina meshte toladot ba'da hadade. Or let's say you did two toladot. You did a toldah of Horesh and a toldah of Zoraya. Since the toldot are from different avot, how many khatat do you bring in one lapse? You bring two. Mehaybe tarte. However, vi'avid av tolada dide. But if you did an av and its tolada, lo mehayev el hada, then you only have to bring one. So therefore, there is a big difference to know what is the av and what is the tolada. Because if a person had one lapse where he did not know the melachot, right? And he did, let's say he did hotza'ah and haknasah. Then he was told, oh, what you did is asur. How many korban chatat does he bring? One. So it's very important for me to know which is the av and which is the tolada.
One av, I'll say.
No, but the purpose is you have to know that this is a tolada of that av. And therefore, of course, otherwise you're not going to know. You bring two different korbanot. The fact that it's a tolada, it's a tolada of the same av, you only bring one korban. Comes the Gemara and says, Ul Rabbi Eliezer, the mechayev at tolda b'mkom av. Amai kari lo av, v'amai kari la tolda. Yeah, that works good according to the rabbi's opinion. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer holds that you are hayav when you do an av and it's tolada. Which means a guy did hotza'ah and hachnasah the same lapse. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you're hayav too. So therefore, what's the difference? What do you call this an av? What do you call this a tolada? So the Gemara says like this. Well, it says like this. Hach davai b'mishkan hashiva kari la'av. Anything that was a significant melacha that we actually found in the Mishkan, we call it av. Hach delo avai b'mishkan hashiva. However, that which we did not find explicitly in the Mishkan, even though it's a significant melacha, lo kari la av, we do not call it an av. Meaning, let's see if we have Rashi, we don't. So there's a machlok exactly how to learn these words. Tosfot brings down different ways. The simple way to understand Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer's deen is, there is no halachic nafkamina. You're right. You're calling it av and av, and you're calling it tolda, it's really semantics. In the sense that what? There is not going to be a halachic nafkamina. So then what's the difference? Only the significant melachot, if it's a significant melacha that we found in the Mishkan, so that's called an av. If it's not such a significant melacha that was in the Mishkan, we call it a tolada. Let's read those lashons the way we have this kirsa. I read it again. Hach davar b'mishkan hashiva. Again, that was in the Mishkan that's considered significant. Kari la av. Ha delo avav b'mishkan hashiva. But those melachot that were in the Mishkan, but they really weren't so significant. Lo kari la av. So it comes out according to this. For some reason, hotza'a is considered, significant as a point, and the other melachat haknasa is not. Iname. So what's called an av? What's called tolada? Iname. Hach tichtiva kari av. Behind the lo ketiva kari tolada. Or just what's written. The ones that are written will be called av, and the one that's not written we call tolada. Specifically by this case here. Because all the other melachot are not written. They are called avot. But the gabe hachnasah and hotza'ah is written, like we just quoted the pasuk. Hachnasah is not. So this one is called an av. This one is called, again, it's not really a halachic nafkamina. It's just a nafkamina in semantics. Comes the Gemara and says, "Ba'adit na." But we learned in the Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah. Hazorek dalid amot bakotel. Lemala ma'asat asarat tefachim kezorek ba'avir. Lemata ma'asarat tefachim kezorek ba'aris. Ve'azorek ba'aris arba amot hayav. Let's get the three cases. Case number one, a person threw something, say a sticky object. He threw it four amot into the shoot of Rabim and it landed on a wall. That's where it rested. Above 10 tefachim. So the Gemara says, it's like he threw it in the air. And therefore it's patur, like it landed in the air. Because it landed in a mekom patur. Ten tefachim above the reshutim is called a mekom patur. And therefore, you threw it, but it landed in a mekom patur, you're patur.
Lemata ma'asrat tefahim. Oh, but if it landed beneath, below 10 tefahim, kizorek ba'aris. That's as if you threw it ba'aris in a neshut hayahid. Vazorek ba'aris da'ad amot. If a person throws 4 amot in the neshut ramim and it lands, hayav. So the Gemara says, Zarak da'ad amot b'neshut ramim min alam. Where do you know this from? She just proved to me, Zorek, from one reshut to another reshut, you told me it's a tolada of Hotza'ah from one reshut to another reshut, and you told me Hachdasah is a Sevara. You proved those lies. Now, how do you know throwing something for Amot in the reshut and Abim? I didn't transfer the Shiyot over here. Which means I just threw it in the same reshut, and it just went for Amot. Because we have a Mishnah that says, if you throw it above 10 and it landed, Batur. Below 10, on the wall, Hayav. Why? Because it's as if like you threw it 4 Amot and it landed on the ground, which is Hayav. Where do you know throwing something 4 Amot in the shoot the Ayid is indeed Hayav? So the Gemara says, Amar of Yoshiyah, Sheken Orge Yiriot. The guys that were involved in weaving the Yiriot, the skins of the Mishkan, Zorkin Mahatehem Zelazeh. They would throw their needles to each other. Right? They were in the Reshut Rabim, right? So they were working. So, you know, they would have, it seems everybody didn't have their own needle. So when they needed to share the needle, they would throw it to each other. You're throwing 4 amot in the Reshut Rabim. The Gemara says, hold it. Orgim mahatim lamaleu. An orego weaver, he doesn't use a needle. Weaver has the loom. He doesn't use the needle. So the Gemara says, fine. Ela sheken tofre yiriot. Alright, so don't call it the weavers. Call it the ones that were sewing the yiriot, the curtains. Zorkin ma'atem zelazeh. So we just change it from the oreg, from the weavers to the sewers. The ones that were sewing the curtains would throw their needles to each other. So the Gemara says, wait. V'dilma gabe hadadi avu yedveh. Avu. Which means, maybe they were sitting next to each other. So you might, they threw it, but maybe they were sitting, let's say, 2 amot away from each other. So therefore, how do you know 4 amot? So the Gemara says, matu adadeh b'mahatin. If they were sitting so close from each other, Rashi says, kishemotchin et ahut makin zedzeh behot, which means when they would, you know, have to go in and out. So if they're sitting close, they would hit the guy next to him. So they have to have their space. So you can't tell me they were sitting next to each other. So Gemara says, Dilma betoch arba avu yatveh. Fine. You want to tell me they weren't sitting in Amah next to each other because they need some space. Okay. But who says there was 4 amot between them? You know, you 4 amot, 6 feet. You don't need that much space for elbow room and for hitting, for pricking each other with the needle. El amar efez dies. Okay. Forget about that. We found Zirika somewhere else. Sheken orge yiriot zorkin buchyar biria. The ones that were weaving the yiriot, the curtains, they would have something that's called a buchyar. Buchyar is like the spool that they would hold the string on. If you look in your Pirush Hai, picture number 461 is the buchyar. It's a receptacle over there that has a spool in the center of it that has the yarn on it. Now what would they do? This was the weft string. So they would have to throw it across the loom in order to get it to the other side. So therefore, they're taking the buchyar and they're throwing it across in the loom. And look, picture number 462, right? You see you have the two warp strings, right? They would separate them and they would throw the weft across it, right? They would elevate it, throw the weft across it. So you're throwing the buchyar for amot. So the Gemara says, V'alo ogdo b'yado. That's not considered throwing something. Because bottom line, you're still holding on to the string. You're not letting it go. You're holding on to the yarn that's still attached to it. As long as you're still holding on to it, that's not considered zirika. You didn't actually throw it. Ogdo b'yado. So Gemara says, b'niska batra. Fine, we're talking about the last string, which means you can just throw it and there's nothing left. So the last spool of thread, so you throw it, so it finishes. You can release it. You're not holding on to anything. So there you go. You threw 4 amot. So that mean? And when I said still no good, v'abimkom patur ka'azla. The area that you're throwing this across, the Gemara calls it a mekom petur, because the height in between the two
No, the height where this buchyat is going through between the two strings on one on top, on the bottom, is less than four tefachim. And therefore, if the height is less than four tefachim, which is going across, is considered resting on an area that's less than four tefachim, even though it's three tefachim above the ground, it has a status of mekom petur. Even if it had four tefachim, it still has the status of a karmelit. So therefore, either or, bottom line, you're not throwing it in the shoot that it's going across a mekom petur or a karmelit. As she learns mekom petur. Oh, actually, the Gemara says mekom petur. I'm sorry. But others say even if it was a fortifying, the Gemara would still have a question. That's the point. So bottom line, we don't have a source. How do you know throwing for amot in the shoot that was asur? Ela sheken orge yiriot. The back to the weavers of the yiriot, the curtains, zorkin buchyar l'sho'alehen. They would throw the buchyar to their friends, which means their friend that was working, they would throw the buchyar, so they're throwing an item for amot. Again, maybe they were sitting next to each other. How do you know it was for amot? Kevra says, no. Matu hadadeh b'haifet. They couldn't sit next to each other. Why? Because when they would throw the buchyat across, they would have to pull the string across, right, to tighten it. So when they would pull the string across, they would hit the neighbor. So you needed space between the workers. That's the way that she understands it. She says, "Matu adadeh b'hefet, I gabayu avu yatvera." She says, they were sitting next to each other. Magirin yados shel ze b'shel ze b'sfata idiah kishimotkin hut ha'erev. She's when they're pulling the weft string, so you know, they're pulling across, they're going to hit the elbow, hit the guy next to him. So the Gemara says, "V'dilma shalchufe avu mishalchafe," which means there is a way to sit in a zigzag fashion where they can still be within four amot of each other. Right? But one sitting here, one sitting in front of him, one sitting in back, they give you the zigzag fashion, your pirush chai in 464. They were sitting in such a fashion where they still have their elbow room, but they're less than four amot. Vetu, and furthermore, mi she'ele mehadadeh, do you think that they needed to borrow each other's buchyars? Vehad tani luda, luda taught, the rabbi's name, ish ish memelachto asher hema osim, memelachto oseh, Gemara says the pasuk that says each man did his work, meaning he did his work, he didn't need his friend to help him do his work, meaning each person had their own utensils and therefore they weren't throwing buchyat to each other. V'tu, and furthermore, ma'avir dal ramot b'rishut rabim minala and me'ayev. At best, all you're showing me now is throwing. How do you know transferring for amot? Which is if a guy walks for amot, he shouldn't be carrying something. How do you know that's hayav? So the Gemara says, Ela kol dal ramot b'rishut arabim gamra gemirila. Halakha l'moshe m'sinai. You're right. You don't have a source really from the Mishkan, but they have a tradition, halakha l'moshe m'sinai. So comes out, let's just review what we have until this point. We discussed Hotza'ah, we have a pasuk. Hachnasa, we said, is a sevara. We said zirika is a tolda of hotzah. Bottom line, you're going from one reshut to another reshut. Whether you do it by walking it across or you do it by throwing it across, how do you know zirika in the same reshut? Halakha Moshe Mishinai, as well as havara in the same reshut, meaning reshut terabim. Now we must go back and explain just for a moment the Mishnah that we mentioned. Throwing a, for example, let's say a fig against the wall and it lands above 10 tefachim, we said patur, because it's considered landing in a mekom petur. Whilst landing less than 10, we said it's considered landing in a reshut hayahid. And we must read Rashi over here.
Harabim.
I'm sorry. Less than 10 is reshut harabim. So it's like you do 4 amot, reshut harabim. This is correct. Let's read that Rashi, please. We'll start with the Rashi Dibur Matril Bekotel. It's like across from the Gilyon Hashas, one or two lines up. Bekotel, Kedemu Kila B'Dvela Shemena. We're talking about a fat fig, when it's baked, so it sticks on the wall. Kezorek Ba'avir. Right, when you throw it above 10, upatur de lo nach b'reshut rabim. Why? The end b'reshut rabim lemala ma'asara. U'b'reshut yachid name lo nach.
Oh, but what do you mean? If it's above 10, so we have a rule. If something is 10 tefachim in the reshut rabim and it's 4x4 area, so it's a din of reshut yachid. So therefore, this wall in the reshut rabim, it's 10 high, right? And it's landing on a spot that's 4x4, so it should be considered going from one reshut to another. Why are you telling me patur? Why do you say it's a status of a reshut yachid? So that she's a very important klal. Lo nach she'eno makom mesuyam she'eh rachbo dalet she'eh lo nach berosh ha'kotel ela befanav. When do we say if it's 4x4, 10 high, only when it lands on top? That's considered makom mesuyam, which means that's the a surface area which is considered a normal area for an item to rest. However, on the side of a wall, that's not the function of the wall. You put things on top of the wall, you put things on the side of the wall. So I don't care if the wall is 4x4, that 4x4 is not going to make it a reshut hayachid. In a kanam, if it landed on top of the wall, reshut hayachid. But this is eno makom mesuyam. It's not really it's not the designated, the normal spot of the uses of that wall. Now read the next rashi. Kezorek ba'aris, but if you throw it less than 10, right, landed under 10, so we said chayav, why? Because it's kezorek ba'aris, de'avir reshut rabimu, because it's considered the airspace of reshut rabim, de'chayav, de'keman de'avir reshut rabimu, ve'nach bechol dehu mechayev. Which means in the reshut rabim, it just has to land anywhere on the wall, because it's like landing in the air of reshut, it's like landing in the reshut rabim. Urshuta le'nafshe lo havi, lo kamelit ve'lo mekom petur. Which means, why don't you tell me that it's its own reshut? Meaning, maybe who says it's a reshut rabim, that area under 10 on a wall? Maybe you'll treat it like a karmelit or a mekom petur, because bottom line, it's not technically a makom misuyam. And it's on the side of the wall, so maybe it doesn't have a din of reshut rabim as well. So that she says, he concludes that she says, hu'ilu fanav nach velo nach berosho, she'e makom misuyam. Which means again, to be considered exactly the Karmelit, it's got to land on Makom Mesuyam. It's got to land either on the top of the wall again. But let's say for the top of the wall was, let's say it was between 3 and 10, right? And the top of the wall was 4x4, that would have a din of a Karmelit. Or let's say it was between 3 and 10, and it was less than 4x4 on the top, would have a din of a Mekom Petur. Here it's landing on the side. For the Shutrim, it does not have to be Makom Mesuyam. Therefore, even if it lands on a kol shehu in the reshut rabim, on the side of the wall, it's going to be considered high. So there's a difference between reshut yachid, and it can't be mekom petur, has to be mekom mesuyam. But for reshut rabim, underneath it's kezorek, it's like considered landed on the ground itself. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mekoshesh, the Mekoshesh. We go back to a story in the Torah, Sefer Bamidbar. So that tells us that there was a fellow that was Mechalel Shabbat in the Midbar. He was called the Mekoshesh, the one that gathered wood, and they stoned him for it. So the Gemara has a question now: what exactly did he do? It's not so clear which melacha with wood did he transgress. So it says, Mekoshesh, Ma'avir arba amot b'reshut rabim hava. The first opinion says he picked up the wood and he carried it 4 amot b'reshut rabim. That's why they stoned him. B'matnitatana, and the Braita is a little different. Tolesh hava. He actually uprooted the wood, so it's over the melachav koser or tolesh from the ground. Ravacha b'rabi Yaakov amar me'amer hava. He says, no, he actually just gathered bundles of wood together, and that's the melacha of collecting, me'amir. So in a three-way mahlokit, what sin did the Mekoshesh do? So the Gemara says, Lemay nafkamina. What's the difference? This is no nafkamina. What is what he did? So he says, no, lechderav. Nafkamina, to teach us the din of Rav. De'amar Rav. Rav once said, Matsati migilat starim be Rabbi Chiya. I once found a book by Rav Chiya. The book is called Megillat Starim. Literally means the scroll of secrets. You have to remember, in the olden days, before Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi redacted the Mishnayot, you weren't allowed to write anything. Torah Shebaal Peh had to remain oral. Now when a Hakam would have a big Hiddush, a Tana would have a big Hiddush that he wanted to remember, he would write it in his own diary, right? In his own personal notes, so he doesn't forget it. Now these notes were around. Now, he said, I once found in Megillat Sterim, on the private notes of Rav Hiya, the following statement. Vekatuv Be'et says the following. Isi ben Yehuda Omer, Isi ben Yehuda says, this is what was written in there. Avot melachot arba'im haser ahat, right, the 39 melachot, ve'eno hayav ela ahat. You only hayav one. Now, what does this mean, you only hayav one? Well, obviously he cannot be referring to one death penalty, because that's obvious. You can only have one death penalty. You can't die more than once. So he must have been saying that if you do all the melachot, you only hayav one korban hatat. So the Gemara said that can't be. Achat vetula. If you did all the 39 melachot in one lapse, you're only going to be hayav one? How can Isi ben Yehuda say such a thing? Ve'atenan avot melachot arba'im haser ahat. Right, we learned in the Mishnah in the 7th Perek that what? It says the 39 melachot, it numbers them. Arba'im haser achat. Ve'avinam, the Gemara analyzed. Minyan alamidi, what do you need to give me the number for? To teach me. If you did them all in one lapse, hayav al kol achat ve'achat. You're going to be hayav one per. So therefore, you hayav 39. So how can Isi ben Yehuda come along and say, if you did them all in one lapse, only hayav one? So that's not what it meant. Emma, you know what it meant? Eno hayav alahat mehem. That one out of the 39, you're not going to be hayav. There's one melacha out of the 39 that's not punishable by sekila. No, meaning 38 are punishable by sekila. One out of the 39, an unknown melacha, only Isi ben Yehuda, that was his hiddush, one out of the 39 is not punishable by sekila. Question, which one is it? So the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda pshita le dehama'avir hayav. Which is, Rav Yehuda said, well, the mikoshesh, what did he do? He carried. And what did they do to the mikoshesh? They stoned him. So we know for sure, we just processed of elimination, we got rid of Havara. And then the Braita learned that what the Mikoshesh was Tolesh. So that can't be it according to the Braita. That he says what? Me'amer. Mar Savar Hamiya lo Misafka. Each rabbi will say, at least we don't have a Safik on this one. Umar Savar Hamiya lo Misafka. On this one, we don't have a Safik. So therefore, all you have to know this is because each one will say, now we narrowed it down to 38. Which means, we definitely know it's either not Tolesh, or it's not Ha'abara, or it's not Me'amer. So it's one out of 38 that's not going to be punishable by Sekira. It still will be punishable by Korban Hatat, mind you. Meaning, if you did all 39, that's the Mishnah said, if you did all 39 in one year, then you hayam al kol ahad v'ahad. Right, only from the death penalty that she says you're not going to get. That's Isi ben Yehuda's Hiddush. That's unknown Hiddush. Which means one of them you're not going to be hayav on. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen. Amen.